Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk. Breathe. Rechalk. Still aiming.
While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go to our next piece of our conversation here. Before the charges, before the fame, before anyone outside a Fortnite lobby knew his name, it's because that's what he did early on. He played Fortnite and became famous playing Fortnite. Amazing what you can do these days. David Burke was a homeschooled kid from a church-going family recording songs on an iPhone in his sister's closet. 4 years later, he had a record deal. A billion streams, and prosecutors allege a 14-year-old girl's body in the trunk of his Tesla. Robin Drake is with us as we continue to trace the line. The retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Gospel music only until age of 13, homeschooled after seventh grade. His whole social world was online, gaming lobbies and streams. When a kid grows up that isolated from real-world consequences, what doesn't get built in a person when that happens?
I think just all we can do is have some conjecture on it, because I'm interacted with a lot of people like this, and they're I wouldn't say they're super well adjusted, but who actually is super well adjusted, but adjusted well enough to not do this kind of stupid shit?
Yeah.
Again, I just think it's a lack of their own personal moral compass, because a moral and ethical compass, I think, because that upbringing was imposed on them, but there obviously wasn't any buy-in to it. So yeah. I still think this is a balance in him of genetics as well as nature and nurture together, because it's hard. There's knowledge is put in there, and I can't think it was the old adage, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But all you can do is hope to make the horse thirsty to make them interested to want to drink. And I think that's what was lacking here. He just wasn't interested in healthy boundaries, healthy lifestyle, healthy relationships. It wasn't ever demonstrated in some way, or maybe it was, because I don't want to bash the parents. We don't know much really about them, except that they...
Their decision-making abilities.
You're right.
Their demonstrated choices is what we know.
Yeah. And so I guess the question is, how far does the apple fall from the tree on that one? And I just don't know, because he is very broken on very many levels, obviously.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously different types of, you know, and I'm not art out there, dark, melancholic, ironic, you know, and his music kind of hit that tone of sad person music, if you will. Sad R&B, dark R&B. He even invented an alter ego called Itami, pain in Japanese, an agent of chaos who commits murders. His other self investigates. Ooh, how deep. I mean, obviously, people are young, they're creative. Creative types are going to create all different sort of things. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing that. But I guess what makes it creepy is all the signs were here. The fact that he had created a alter ego that's an agent of chaos, then commits murders as the alter ego, and then self-investigates. He does it through art and his music videos. Literally bodies in trunks, a bloody knife, playing a killer and a victim. I mean, what is the line here between dark art and rehearsal? And do you think he went into, I guess it's this chicken before the egg I'm trying to get to. Was this, you know, a world where he thought, you know, this is the path he's going to go down and actually kill somebody? Or did the art inspire him to do something like this? It's like, well, I've done this in a video. I guess maybe I could do it in real life. Where do you think the line was crossed here of this is the best choice for me at this moment in time is to remove this other person from the planet, allegedly, if he did it, versus just, you know, do art that is very macabre and dark. I mean, many people do macabre art and never murder anybody.
Yeah, but it definitely gives you a pause when there's a wobble from what you typically expect from someone at a certain age level, the way they're interacting with the world, the type of relationships they're having. And so when you see a wobble from what you're expecting a normal healthy behavior to have, you kind of zero in on it and then you explore it. You know, I'm saying the parents in his life, the responsible adults in his life, and you kind of see if there's more there. In cases like this, I mean, again, from the outside looking in, from the limited data we have, although we have a lot more on this case than most cases, you're seeing someone who is fantasizing about dark things, dark art, dark murders, you know, court. I mean, just the whole genre is very, very dark and violent. And so when you start seeing fantasies about that, because obviously you have to have a fantasy if you're going to create art about it, because you're thinking about it, you're imagining it. I can only imagine it desensitizes you. I know it does. I don't have to imagine. It does desensitize you towards those things. Then when you consume more data, you consume more information, you consume more art around the same genre, because that could be inspiring to you. It just completely flattens out any affect you have when you see these types of things. So when you have a problem arise, like the girlfriend who's going to report you about, you know, dating and doing more horrendous things to someone who's underage, your mind can naturally go to the problem solving that you've been desensitized to. Well, I'll just do this because why not? Because this is what I've seen work before in this fantasy world I'm living. So I from what we see, premeditated early on to take care of her like this, don't think so, because they had a relationship, they got matching tattoos, they did all those other things. But as a problem solving skill set that he had, that looks like it was probably it.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an extreme to go to, but not for him. Yeah, I don't know that he saw another way out. And honestly, there really wasn't. I mean, there was no way out. Unless she didn't, you know, expose him for what he was, but then he'd have to be accountable for his what he's done.
And you look at the motivation again. It goes back to fear. What did he fear? He feared exposure. And the way you counter that fear is control. I'm going to control the narrative. I'm going to control her. The only way I'm going to control her, again, innocent until proven guilty, I'm going to get rid of the problem. And since he's been desensitized, to him, that was not extreme. If you just are surrounded yourself by that kind of chaos and that kind of dark art where death is a way of life, a way of viewing things, unhealthy relationships is, it's not extreme for him from his context to say, that's how I'm going to solve his problem. I'll eradicate the problem because I have fear. Fear is our motivator. Fear was his motivator.
Prosecutors say he met Celeste when she was 11. He was still in high school, which is still very nuts. Deputies flagged it in 2024, a label, management, the whole machine invested in him. Why do you think nobody stepped in? Do you think at the end of the day, I mean, this is just conjecture, the label's not on trial, the family's not on trial, the friends aren't on trial. I know the quick excuse is always, well, she said she was older than she was, and she looked a little bit older than she was. I think that's up for debate. There's some photos where she looks very much like the age that she is. There's some where she doesn't. This person in this orbit is going around. There's people who had to book plane tickets. Those sort of things require ages and IDs and information, and they have to match up. So I just don't buy this idea that absolutely no one had no idea how old she was. The question is, were they ever going to say anything about it, or were they just going to continue to do what the music industry always does? We're just going to hope nothing bad happens. And eventually this will blow over. She'll go off into the ether. He'll move on. And then, you know, X amount of years later, it'll be a Mick Jagger story or a Steven Tyler type story,
right.
where it's like, well, then everybody's like, well, and people look the other way because people are sick. But, you know, it makes you wonder what was the game plan here? Because he's the cash cow. Don't disturb the cash cow.
Yeah.
Was that the simplicity of it? And it just went horribly wrong. And now everything's come back to roost. And the people who were like, we were hoping this was going to blow over, now have to answer for not doing or saying anything.
Yeah. I think it's really that simple. I don't think it's really complicated. I don't think there's a big high thinkers going on here where they fear, again, the fear motivator on this one, they fear losing the cash cow, their way of life. And with the hope, again, when you hang your hat on hope that she'll eventually age out of being underage, well, we'll just wait a little while. Just turn my head a little bit this way. And to one of the viewers' comments about, you know, what did they fear? Because everyone in the circle knew it. I think if I was her, it wasn't her saying to the entourage that I'm underage. It's her saying, I'm going to go to law enforcement and say I'm underage. That's a whole different kind of fear that then jumps into everyone's mindset, especially if it's his, because he can control their narrative by the fear is I will kick you out of the cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be very unwritten. I mean, that's what Diddy did all the time. So I think this is just that same kind of very simple, very basic. People don't want to rock the boat, keeping things as is, keeping them status quo. And she did something that was out of the norm of what was going on, of what she threatened to escalate it towards, I got to take action.
I'm a little surprised, honestly. I'm not saying this is the right answer, but I'm a little surprised that there wasn't, if she's making these sort of threats of exposure, I'm guessing he didn't go anywhere with it. I'm guessing he didn't communicate this to anybody, that there were these threats that she was going to expose him. Because my guess would be that if there had been adults in the room, and again, not saying that there should be great thinking adults, but adults in the room who have some experience in the music industry, there might have been thoughts of, can we write her a check and have her shut up?
Yeah, you would have thought that they would have just kicked that someone. If he actually had a handler that was actually handling him, she would have been kicked out long ago.
Yeah, and I don't think any of that was going on. No. I mean, he was an indie artist. He didn't necessarily have the apparatus of like a Diddy or anything like that. He was nowhere near that level. So I do wonder how much was really being handled strictly by him. And because that's most of it.
Yeah, my guess is it's all him. So let's look at that life arc before that. So say you have, again, our conjecture on this one from what we know, you have controlling parents, you got a controlling situation in life where it's been controlled for you and you're rebelling against control. And so finally, when you do get control, there's going to be a visceral reaction to anyone trying to control him or handle him. And so if you're because I'm just thinking about this. This actually plays into exactly what I think played out here, is that say someone in that entourage started to say something or say, hey, what's going on with Celeste over here? She seems to be a little underage. Maybe you might want to rethink this. Well, that sounds an awful lot like a parent who's been trying to control him his whole life. So what's he going to do? Boof.
Push him out, yeah.
Yeah. And so how did people get silenced? Because if you try to exercise control or give your thought or opinion, which was against his, which was what his life arc maybe to this point has been, you're going to get rid of them and just say, you're done with the cash cow.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, it's a lot of conjecture, but people who tend to have been controlled heavily early on in their life that then get their taste of freedom, they are very quick to reject any form of control, even if it truly is in one's best interest, not just someone's religiosity, extremism that they're trying to push onto somebody for their agenda. They're just going to flat out reject anything. But first people need to say something. I guess that's where we're at, is like, did anybody even go there? Not just like didn't go there because they knew that David would kick them out of their lives. I mean, like, look at Michael Jackson. I mean, that's someone who, there was plenty of people in that world who said, who told him this was not a good idea. Don't do this. Don't do that. It's not a great idea to sleep with kids in your bed, even if you're not doing anything with them. And I'm not going into diddy or diddany. But he pushed every single person out of his world who gave him good advice of like, this is not acceptable shit to be doing if you don't want to be liable. I wonder how much of that was at play here too, with him being young and dumb, as well. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of questions there.
Yeah. And I want to add another little thing in here, I think also plays into it also. As human beings, we typically don't believe someone's going to do something very horrendous very often at all, unless they, I mean, how many times, you know, when someone says, all right, there's been a murder over in this area, everyone be on the lookout, right? People put in their mind what they're going to be on the lookout for. They're going to be looking for some sleazy, greasy guy that looks like a murderer. No. I mean, it's very rarely that case because we have a conjecture of what it is. In other words, you have what's called primacy. You give yourself your own confirmation bias in what you're going to see or not see. And typically people don't expect someone who is likable and they like, because again, when I've seen him and doing interviews and stuff, he's a likable kid.
Yeah.
And so when you put likability and you put success, you put problem solving, and you put the cash cow all into one bucket, people's thought process on he's going to fix a problem by killing someone is probably not on the forefront of their mind that that could ever possibly happen, because likable, nice people don't do that. And so I think that also played into the reason why people didn't come forward. Plus, again, they wouldn't even, I'd imagine it wasn't like he'd be controlling his environment around him just in one area. He probably leaked all the time. I got this. I'm in control. I'm managing everything because I'm successful. I made all the money and I did it all on my own. Because even on his mother's one statement, you know, with the Fortnite thing or with the writer's strike, I think it is, she said, and you probably know the question better than me or the statement, you know, it's like she said, hey, you know, don't worry about the writer's strike, write your own music. So you have that early problem solving skill set that he built early on. And then when you have control, you don't like outside input. People know, don't give him outside input, because who am I to argue? Look at all the success he's had. So kind of it keeps piling in that bucket of stupid goo.
It wasn't writer's strike. It was copyright strikes.
That's right. That's what it was.
On material that he was using on YouTube. So he decided to make his own. And my God, I mean, if you're, you know, a parent or something, or you're the person who's doing it, you're like, okay, I'll just make my own. That's like, that's something to be proud of. Holy crap. You're not relying on like third party stuff. That's like, there was like, this is, I just feel like this is one of those cases where this is a brain that has very savant like problem solving skills in certain areas and zero to none in others, which is very common amongst very creative types. It's how the brains work. It's not super shocking, but it is also usually the downfall of characters like this. And he's just one of many in history at the end of the day. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to discuss the David case and where it all continues to go.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A blue inflatable kiddie pool sat in the garage of a Hollywood Hills rental home. It had cuts in it. Not tears from water, lots of playing on a hot summer afternoon, cuts, scalpeled and straight, made with some kind of sharp object. You know, the things you shouldn't have around a kiddie pool. And pieces were missing from those cuts. An LAPD trace analyst named Lisa Lehendro, over 20 years on the job, examined that pool. Then she examined the clothing recovered with the remains of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez, and the missing fragments from the pool were on her leggings on the remains. That is what day three of the preliminary hearing against David, D4VD, put into the record. in a Los Angeles courtroom. David Anthony Burke, the singer known as David, is charged with first-degree murder with special circumstances, illegal acts involving a minor under 14, and mutilation of human remains. You know, another Tuesday in the music world. He has pled not guilty. His defense team says they will vigorously defend his innocence. Okay, well, that's good. How is he innocent? How? The hearing in front of Judge Ometo is expected to run another few days. This is our breakdown of day three. A bind-over ruling. The decision on whether Burke stands trial, I mean, that really could come at any point. So as of this recording, we haven't reached it yet. That doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. We will certainly bring it to you as it does. But we're breaking things down so you get a full picture of these hearings that lead up to the judge saying, yes, this is going to trial, or nah, I don't think so. And on day three, two things happened. The prosecution connected the garage to the body through physical evidence you can hold in your hand. And the defense showed you exactly where they're going as well. Investigators also found jugs of fake blood in that garage. Because if you didn't have enough when you chainsawed your girlfriend, a little extra, you know, in case Halloween comes around and you're out. The defense has an explanation for those, and a detective testified about three separate drives Burke allegedly took to the same stretch of highway in Santa Barbara County, the same stretch where Celeste's passport card was later found in the dirt. Coincidence. Could have been anywhere. The wind, the seagull, a stork delivering a baby. A stork delivered a baby down the road, Judge, and then he picked up her card and they just happened to go around the same route. There's an in and out down that way. They both like to go that way. The stork that picked up the card and David, it's all a big, big misunderstanding. Whoopsie woo. Let's let him go back on tour, right? No. Lejendro took the stand and walked through what she found inside the blue inflatable pool from the garage. You're never going to think of children's pools the same again after this. I'm sorry. Hair fibers, plant material, black foam-like fragments. The pool had been cut apart with something sharp, and the pieces that were removed didn't end up in a dumpster. They ended up on a dead girl. Many of the fragments were recovered from Celeste's leggings. The fragments were small, the kind of physical evidence you don't see without a crime lab. But they draw a line between two pieces that should have nothing to do with each other. A garage in the Hollywood Hills and the remains of a 14-year-old girl from Lake Elsinore. The prosecution doesn't need a witness who saw what happened in that garage. They don't need a confession. They have plastic, tiny pieces of a blue inflatable pool that traveled from the garage to the body. Lejendra's testimony connects the cutting of the pool to the clothing Celeste was wearing when her remains were also recovered and cut. That connection doesn't depend on anyone's story. It depends on a microscope. Lauren Wallace, another LAPD criminalist who started her testimony the day before and continued on day three. She testified about searching the Hollywood Hills rental where Burke had been living. What she found in the garage went beyond the pool. There were indications throughout the space that blood had been cleaned up, real blood, scrubbed from surfaces in a garage that also held an inflatable pool with chunks cut out of it. Prosecutors allege that Burke dismembered Celeste's body in that garage. The garage wasn't messy. It was actually clean. Someone scrubbed blood off those surfaces and left the pool behind. I know. It's like, what? Were this stupid? Then a third criminalist, Samantha Tosh, testified that blood and DNA samples collected from Burke's Tesla and the rented home matched Celeste's DNAs. Not a partial match, not a statistical likelihood. A match! The car, the house, the body, all linked through DNA recovered in the investigation. This is getting more slam dunky every day. So here's where things stood heading into the defense's cross-examination. The prosecution had pool fragments on the clothing found with Celeste's remains. They had cleaned up blood in the garage. They had DNA from the Tesla and the house matching Celeste, three independent threads, physical trace evidence, cleanup evidence, and DNA all pointing at the same garage, the same car, the same person's home. And then Blair Burke stood up. Burke is one of the most prominent defense attorneys in Los Angeles. She represents high-profile clients. She has handled cases with the kinds of media pressure like this before. And her cross-examination on day three wasn't subtle about what she's building towards. She spent her time on the stand with Lauren Wallace, asking one kind of question over and over and over and over. Poking holes. It's her job. Not knocking her at all. She's a good defense attorney. What was the question being asked over and over 5,000 different ways? What didn't you test? Two small chainsaws sat in that garage. So did a mini saw. Wallace testified that initial chemical tests on the blade showed no signs of blood because there was no indication of blood. The handles were never swabbed for DNA. The saws were screened. They came back clean and the investigation moved on. Burke did not move on. She zeroed in on the gap between a negative blood test and a DNA swab that was never performed. If an item has somebody else's DNA on it, wouldn't be able to see that at the time, she said. Wallace agreed. No, you're not able to see touch DNA. But that doesn't preclude at all that there could be somebody else's touch DNA, Burke pressed. Wallace agreed again. You know, it's finding little, well, it could be this, right? Well, I mean, yes, and there might be aliens too. Probably more likelihood of that than this being someone other than David responsible. Then came the question that tells you the entire defense strategy is a single, basically tells you the whole defense strategy, I would say in a single sentence. Burke asked Wallace, were you aware that multiple people lived at that residence? Wallace said yes. That exchange is the defense case in miniature. Someone else lived in that house. Someone else had access to that garage. Someone else could have touched those tools. And the police never checked. The handles went unswabbed. The blades tested negative. And the investigation moved past them. Burke is building a narrative around what investigators chose not to do, which again is why you need to do thorough investigations. This is she's going for a reasonable doubt because the evidence is damning. And she's doing it in the preliminary hearing where the standard is bind over, or the standard for bind over is probable cause, not guilt, beyond a reasonable doubt. She's getting the gaps into the record early. Under redirect, the prosecution pushed back hard. Testing for the suspect's own DNA at his own residence wouldn't prove anything. Of course, Burke's DNA is everywhere in his own house. That's meaningless. Burke fired right back. You knew other people lived there too. Yeah, but again, meaningless. That gap, the untested handles, the unswabbed tools, the other residents, is the space Burke is going to try to build a defense inside of. And good luck with that. For a moment, it has some weight. The chainsaws are clean. The handles were never tested. Other people had access. If you freeze the testimony right there, you might start wondering whether the investigation moved too fast and missed something. But the prosecution didn't need the chainsaws. They have the pool. They have the DNA. They have the cleanup. The chainsaws are the trees Burke wants the jury to focus on. The prosecution's case is the forest. And in that same garage, jugs of fake blood. Wallace testified that she found jugs of fake blood in the garage. Burke's strategy with them was clear through the way she questioned the witnesses. Burke used the fake blood for music videos, his online persona, an alter ego called Itami. It trades in dark, violent imagery. What a great image when you're going to trial. His breakthrough single was called Romantic Homicide. It has over 1 billion plays on Spotify. His debut album, Withered, dropped 2 days after prosecutors alleged Celeste was killed. The defense needs the jury to see that garage as a creative workspace, a studio where a young artist with a massive online following made content that required props, fake blood, inflatable pools, tools. The prosecution's answer is in the same room. Real blood, clean from surfaces, in the same garage where the fake blood sat on the shelf next to a pool with chunks cut out of it and fragments matching a dead girl's clothing. A garage can be a studio. A garage can also be a crime scene. The physical evidence tells you which one it was. The defense music video explanation has to survive that contrast, and it has to survive it at trial in front of a jury who will also see Lejandro's fragment analysis and Tasha's DNA match. Could it be a studio and a murder cell? Yeah, both at the same time. Do it Tuesday with one, and it's a pre-trial run, and then you actually do the real thing on Wednesday, you know? Then the testimony shifted from the garage to the road. Detective William Roker specializes in technology analysis for the LAPD. He took the stand on day three and laid out cell tower data and vehicle tracking that placed Burke's movements across two counties. The data showed Burke's Tesla Model X and his cell phone traveled together from the Hollywood Hills to Santa Barbara County on April 23rd and 24th. That Tesla is the same car where Celeste remains were later found in the front trunk. April 23rd to 25 is the date prosecutors allege she was killed. He didn't just drive there. He drove through a specific corridor near Highway 154 in Santa Barbara County, roughly 95 miles northwest of his house. It's the same stretch of road where the highway worker later found Celeste's passport card. Get rid of this. Good thinking, David. You're really good at this, aren't you? Records also showed that Burke charged his electric vehicle in Santa Ynez. So around the same time, that detail matters because it places the car and the charging activity in the geographic window the prosecution is building around. The EV charging station is a timestamp and a location rolled into one. It's hard evidence that the car was in that area, drawn from a system Burke had no reason to think anyone would ever examine. Then Rucker testified about what came after April 23rd. Burke went back. Records show two additional trips to the same area in May. Three drives total to the same remote stretch of highway spread across multiple weeks. The defense's somebody else argument runs into a bit of a wall there. It's not just the garage. It's not just the pool, the DNA, and the cleanup. It's the road. Three trips to the same corridor, all tracked through Burke's phone and Burke's car. Starting on the night, prosecutors allege Celeste died. Whatever happened in that garage, someone drove that Tesla to Santa Barbara County three times in the weeks that followed, and every trip tracked to Burke's own devices. The motive isn't a mystery. Celeste had already grown jealous of Burke's relationships with other women. Prosecutors allege she threatened to expose him and destroy his music career, a career an Interscope Records executive valued at $13 to $19 million under oath earlier in the hearing. That's the financial gain special circumstance on the murder charge. The prosecution also alleged Burke sent a car to pick Celeste up on the night of April 23rd, 25. She arrived at his Hollywood Hills home, and according to prosecutors, she was never heard from again. Her body was found months later in the frunk of that same Tesla. The car had been abandoned in the Hollywood Hills. Neighbors reported it sitting on the street for over a month before it was finally towed. When criminals finally got inside, they counted at least 11 air fresheners. Console, front trunk, scattered through the car. Still smelled like decomposition. There's no amount of little Christmas trees that you're going to put in there. They're going to fix that. There were insects inside the trunk as well. The medical examiner listed Celeste's cause of death as multiple penetrating injuries caused by an object or objects. She sat in that car for months. And according to prosecutors, a man who put her there kept touring, kept performing, kept making music under the name David while her remains decomposed in the front trunk of a Tesla abandoned on a residential street. The hearing continues. The judge has to decide whether there's probable cause to send Burke to trial. Blair Burke got real concessions on day three. The chainsaw handles were never swabbed. The exterior of the Tesla was never tested for DNA. Those are legitimate gaps in the evidence collection, and Burke made sure the record reflects every one of them. But gaps in what police didn't test only carry weight at a trial if the jury stops looking at what the police actually found. And what they found is a kiddie pool with chunks cut out of it in the garage where blood had been scrubbed from the surfaces, fragments from that pool on the leggings of a dead 14-year-old girl, DNA matching her in the Tesla and the house, the car that drove to the same remote corridor in Santa Barbara County three times in the weeks after she allegedly died, every trip logged to Burke's phone, every mile tracked. The defense wants you to look at the chainsaws. The prosecution wants you to stand in the garage and see everything else. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was 14 years old. She's from Lake Elsinore. She went to Burke's Hollywood Hills home on April 23rd of 25, and according to prosecutors, she was never heard from again. Her remains were found on September 8th, the day after what would have been her 15th birthday. Her family waited over a year for answers. The preliminary hearing that may lead to those answers is still ongoing. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage as we continue to watch this for you every single day. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as well. We'll continue our conversation over there. Links are in the description. Press subscribe wherever you're watching so you don't miss any of our coverage. We got a lot for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.